Welcome back. This is Psych the Blind. Finally got a guest on. I've been talking to this brother a lot of the times on email, and we discuss certain topics, and I'm pretty sure we're gonna bring these topics out in this episode. So I'll let my guest go ahead and introduce himself.
Hey everybody, my name is Jamal George. Kind of been in this faith for a little bit since 2020, really when I started the walk, but known about it. I'm from Washington State area. Been in Washington State since about 2020 as well. And I mean, I'll talk about that because I think that goes part along with the testimony. But yeah, that's a little bit about me. I'm sure we'll get into a lot of it too. So
When did you start becoming awakened?
I would say it was truly around the when I really started to go into the walk. It had to be about 2020, 2021, so it was around that range. But I would say when I was deployed in Afghanistan, there was a brother that told me about this faith, and I just really didn't really believe it. But then, like, it kind of came to pass a little bit more in 2016 when my brother-in-law started talking to me about it. And then it kind of made sense. And then I really started walking it in 2020 when actually after a lot of things happened, you talked about like that isolation phase, that probationary period, all that. That's when it really started to manifest. So
What was that one thing that clicked and was like, oh, okay, now I get it? Was there a verse or something you saw on TV or just something somebody said to you that made you be like, oh, now I get it?
man, it would have to be around that the Kyrie time frame. And I was actually going through a lot of stuff at work, family wise around that same time frame. And that was when I think that's when that isolation period happened. And I believe around that same time frame, I think Whitlock, Jason Whitlock, had a little deal, and he was interviewing the dude from IUIC. And then he actually interviewed you, I think, on that same episode, I believe. And then that's when things started to, resonate. And then, like, I actually just started reading, right? Started reading, and that's when it started to make a lot of sense.
What part in the scriptures did you read that it started clicking, if you can remember?
Shoot. And it's funny, it was a lot of it. I think Deuteronomy 28, and I think that's the big one that gets everybody. But where it really clicked was actually, believe it or not, it was actually Deuteronomy 23 for me. And why that clicked is because I'm not sure if you're familiar with that one. Actually, Deuteronomy 23, the first verse where it talks about man that wounds his stones can't inherit the kingdom. And for me, I had a vasectomy in 2016. And for something, I was like, wait a second. That kind of scared me a little bit. And so that is actually where I was like, okay, let me start digging into this because there's so many things that we do in this world that we think is just normal, and because of what the world tells us. And then, like, once I started thinking, I was like, man, there's just so much in this book that now it's starting to make sense, and that this we've been taught this big old lie, and we've all been taught the same big old lie. And that started to wake me from it. I know that was a weird scripture for it, but that goes into my whole testimony with my son. We had our sons around the same time frame, and I had a vasectomy reversal, and that window of everything just kind of manifested. And the Most High put it on my heart that that was going to happen. That was part of the restoration and that whole dry bones, awakening, that redemption process. So
Damn,
that
bro,
was huge for
that's
me.
powerful, bro. To get a reversal just like that when you see it at the right time and then you have a son at the same time, that's kind of powerful. What made you get the vasectomy in the first place?
Man, so we had two girls. Me and my wife had two girls, and we were just kind of like, man, we're kind of done. It was kind of a lot. We had them 2 years apart, and I just felt like, oh, I'm probably never. I really wanted a boy, but I was like, man, I'm probably never gonna get that boy the way, the way I am. I was like, I don't know. So I just kind of, had like no real faith in that whole situation. We were both kind of in agreement, like, we're done. Let's just raise the girls and, do that same thing. So I got that reverse, or I got the vasectomy in 2016, and when I found out about that, it was actually so no, I actually yeah, 2016 is when I had the reversal. No, when I got the vasectomy, 2023 is when I got the reversal. So it was at the beginning of actually or the end of 22, beginning of 23, when I started to go down that whole plan, that path of doing the whole reversal. And which is funny because the other day I do counseling with I got a lot of stuff going on with work, and I do counseling, and the counselor was like, you realize that was a 7 year window when you realized the catch about that, and then from when you had your son, that was a 3 year. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, 3 years from the reversal date, and then 7 years, like, the numbers are just like, I was like, okay, that's a little bit of confirmation right there for me. And I remember when that happened, Yah put it on my heart. I'm not gonna say he told me this was gonna happen, but he put it on my heart, like, hey, if you do this, this is gonna be that restoration phase. I'm gonna show you that you're ready. I'm gonna restore your bloodline. And that's really how I felt. And it was confirmation, more so confirmation for me too, when I was reading Psalms 20 or 127 verse 3, when it talks about your kids are the inheritance of Yah, and that's a gift, that's his gift to you. So that kind of resonated with me all in that same moment,
Going back to when you were in the world, do you feel like your relationship with your wife and having two girls, was that your karma for how you acted in your previous relationships? Because you alluded to that kind of just saying like you wanted a boy, but you got these two girls, and there's a reason but why you had these two girls first.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that is a lot of that reason. There's it goes really deep into that. The mistakes that I've made in the past, even with more so, the affair and all these different things, right? Like, I think a lot of these things was part of that growth process that I wasn't ready to do. I wasn't ready to raise a man, right? Like, and part of that, I think, even stems from even my relationship with my dad, not knowing my dad growing up. Like, I didn't even know how to be a father at that point, but I was going to do my best. So I think, I definitely think that stems from, like, past errors in the world.
How could you clean that up without obviously opening up the Bible beforehand? How did you kind of get yourself to this path now and be like, okay, now I'm restoring myself, but how did you fix it a little bit before you actually was awakened?
That's a good question. How I fixed it before, I'll have to think about that. Like, really, after that was just more so just trying to, I guess, be honest with myself and quit trying to, like, impress the world. Like, even at that time, right? Like, working out a lot, like, just more worried about, I would say I was pretty selfish in some sense, right? Like, and focusing on other things and not really family. And I think just switching that back and giving my wife more attention, giving the kids more attention, and focusing on the real things, I think that kind of brought me back. And actually knowing that, losing your family was also another big scary part of that as well. So I think a lot of it was just trying to get validation from others. Like, I really don't care about that anymore. And even the guys at work that know me know I don't really care about what anybody thinks about me at this point. So I think a lot of that was just, like, really just not worrying about what the world thinks, but worried about what people thinks and how they view me.
What were the vices that you had to let go of? That could be anything from physical, material, emotional.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of those vices, one of the big things I would say was, like, maybe a little bit of the alcohol. That was one of the biggest things. I wasn't too heavy of a drinker, but I think as it got to a point, it started to progress a little bit more. I wouldn't say I was an alcoholic, but I did see, a difference in drinking and certain things and how it was getting more and more, right? Especially even when we made the move, because we lived in Texas when a lot of this went on, and then we made the move to Washington. And I think a lot of that, a lot of that was actually, I think that's more the big thing is making the transition and making the move. And, you know, it makes me think of more so of that, you know, the parable of the, the barren fig tree, like having to uproot that tree and move you out of that place of comfortability. Like, 'cause we came out to this area and like we didn't really know anybody and all that. So actually removing myself from that area. I mean, all my wife's family was there. My mom was actually not too far from that area. But then just being, you know, the relationships that we built, I think a lot of that could have had, you know, a lot of influence on me too, you know, just, you know, the friends that I was already, you know, developed a working relationship with out there. And being able to leave that and start over and be put in this weird, it was weird coming out to Washington, especially the West Coast, like how so left-leaning they are, coming from like a more conservative area. I think that had a big influence on a lot of changes that, you know, I had to focus on and protect my family in that way too, especially during COVID. And it just got real weird. So some advices I would say is drinking. A lot of it too that I actually had to learn even through this walk was like the sports, like watching sports, playing sports, and that was a big thing because, you know, and then spending a lot of time in the gym. And I think even some more so too, like the vanity aspect of it, like buying shoes, buying these things, which is still like some of the things that I still got to work on, you know. But I think a lot of those things, just worrying about like the worldly things that don't really matter, starting to like realize that, you know, the way this world is actually started to pull me back a lot from a lot of that stuff, starting to see how the world really is, especially with my time in the military.
How did your parents adjust, or your family members adjust with you guys leaving, obviously choosing a different walk?
I would say it's actually very interesting. So my wife's brother, or my brother-in-law, both of her brothers are actually kind of in this walk already, and they actually kind of pushed me in this direction. And you know, that my wife, she's Mexican, and her brothers were like, yeah, like I don't believe anything. Like they were the ones that even kind of really even pushed the whole like, you know, you guys are the real heroes type thing, like on me at first. And at first I was kind of like, okay, like even her youngest brother was the one that got us doing more so the Sabbaths, that like when we were doing, you know, the Saturday Sabbaths, like we would all go to one place, we would read and do all these different things and eat and do that. So that was kind of one of the things I guess that would say that helped. So that part was a little bit easier. But you know, my wife, her sisters, you know, they all also don't agree with that. So it was more so dealing with, you know, my wife's family on that side, like her sisters, that like they have a completely different view on that. So that part was a little tough. I'm working on my mom right now, and that's been really good because like she's telling me, she's like, oh yeah, you gotta buy me, you know, the Hallelujah Scriptures or the Sefer, like, and we, you know, I send her a lot of the Truth Unedited videos. I'll send her your podcast, you know. So that's actually been good. I think the toughest part is my brother, one of my oldest brothers, is he actually doesn't live too far from us, but he's so like stuck in the politics and government and, you know, one side of this and that, and not seeing the whole big picture of how they're all just really just all part of the same team. And so that's been, you know, I guess the tough part, but at the same time, it doesn't really affect our relationship because they know we keep Sabbath, and I think there's that mutual respect. Like they're not going to pressure me. Like if they want to come over, like typically they'll be like, if they want the kids to hang out, they'll be like, I'm like, no, we got Sabbath today. They're like, okay, we'll schedule something around that. So I mean, that part has been cool, but I think mainly I've just been trying to share with them, you know, a lot of that. And then even like with my dad now, you know, as he's back in my life, I've just been trying to share a lot of that stuff with him, and his history is crazy too, because he was a, you know, he was a Black Panther, and so he's got like that whole, you know, Pan-African type, you know, mindset where, you know, still like could be Egypt, whatever, just like, you know, just like the whole different types of, you know, pagan gods and all these different things. So that's been like the transition of trying to sell him on this, and he's like, I sent him a lot of this stuff. And try to teach him on these things, or just trying to show him these things, not necessarily teach him, but try to show him these things. And that's been good. It's somewhat good. He's kind of understanding, but he's always at the same time, he's like, yeah, these characters, right? I'm like, no, these aren't characters. These are real
These
These
right.
are like these are your ancestors. These are real people. Like, so it's kind of funny trying to explain it to him because he's like not. He's like invested. He's like, I see what you guys are saying, but he's just not fully in it,
Right.
So.
How was that dynamic? Your father being a Black Panther, and then you going into the military. Was there, were you at odds during that conversation or that movement?
No. And the funny thing is, right, because obviously my dad, I didn't meet my dad till I was 33. I'm 36 now. And so we didn't have that relationship, but he was a Vietnam vet as well. But when he came out, actually, I don't think he ever went, but he was in that area. I don't think he went to Vietnam, but when he came out is when he joined the Black Panthers. He went to Howard University and then he joined the Black Panthers. And so he actually, we weren't really at odds in that. He's kind of really accepting of a lot of things and understanding, or just understanding some of the things that are going on. He's definitely like still in that whole that black power type stuff today, in a sense. Just not, I would say it's kind of dialed down a lot, but I don't think there's any odds. We weren't at odds with that. I think the more commonality is that we were both in the military, so that kind of like drew up some conversations for us to kind of engage and get to know each other a little bit more,
Do you see that as, I wouldn't say a generational curse, but kind of like how things are passed down? Because obviously him going into the military and then coming out of Black Panther, you go into the military and come out of Israelite. Do you see any connection with you guys as, just how you guys are and be able to connect those dots?
Yeah, I mean, I do see a lot of that. I do see, I try to use that too, like to try to bridge the gap, in a sense of like, hey, there is some commonalities and there is, some of the issues, but mainly the generational curses, I would say too, I feel that are passed down from him is, more so the issues that I had, with, my relationships, the marriage and all these different things, right? Because he was, with my mom, right? Like, and then come to find out I have other brothers and sisters through him that were all just kind of scattered about. And it's like, he wasn't there for really any of our childhoods, right? So now I have a relationship with those brothers and sisters. And I think that curse, kind of where I made my mistakes, with my marriage is like, I feel like, yeah, that kind of, some of those things kind of stem down those generational curses. And then even like he talked about, the thing of, the Freemasonry, like the Prince, like that's on my mom's side. That's, that's my grandpa on my mom's side. My mom told me like he used to have all his stuff in his closet, and you'd go to those meetings and all that. So like, I mean, there's a lot of stuff passed down, and when I started to understand these things, I'm like, it has to stop here.
Were you ever approached to join anything?
Yes, I was when I was in the army. I was approached to join the Freemasons, and there was this one sergeant, this one brother. He would always be like, "Hey, come step in the light, come get enlightened." And I always thought it was funny because I was like, part of me, even when I talked to my wife, I was like, "Man, I wanted to infiltrate the unit," but then I was like, "Well, how far will I go? Like, want to see what's going on in there?" But so, that I definitely did get approached with that. And it's funny because I have so many, so many guys that I serve with that are in like some of those Prince Hall Freemasons. And I'm just like, man, what are you guys doing it? But I always knew about it. I was always curious. And then when it finally happened, because I was pretty successful in the military, when it finally happened, they're like, hey, you need this if you want to go a little bit further, if you want to do that. And I already had my mindset. I was like, I'm getting out of this stuff. This stuff is ridiculous. It wasn't for me. And, but yeah, I did definitely got approached, and I definitely was staying away from that.
Did you see any action?
Yes.
Well, we're at.
I was deployed in Afghanistan in 2012. So I was in Wardak Province, RC East. So definitely did combat, and we actually, our unit, we lost 6 individuals. So it was a pretty, one of them was my good friend Clarence. And we went to basic training together, did all these, went to the same unit together. And so that was a tough deployment, but I'm actually grateful I experienced it because I did learn a lot, got to see a lot, made me realize that, being in the service made me realize that we are the bad guys. We're like those stormtroopers. And I started to see that while we were there. And that's where I'll go on to a little bit. Like, I remember there's waking up, going, getting ready to go to mission. You're just like, man, we got to go out and get shot at today. But I remember just sitting there at the edge of my bed one morning, and I even remember having this conversation with my buddy, and he feels the same way about me. And I'd sit down and be like, hey, so what are we doing here today that's actually helping the people back home? And we would both sit there, and I was like, do we have like an idea what we're actually doing that's helping anybody back home? And we'd both be like, no, nothing what we're doing right now is helping anything at home. Like, everybody's just living their regular lives, not realizing what's going on. And I said, we're sitting here trying to force this so-called democracy on these people, and nothing is being done. They didn't want us there. But when it started to register too, like, I realized, like, just like what you talk about, it was 100% a resource war. It had nothing to do with war on terror. Like, I was there, that was under Obama's administration. And so when I realized it, China was actually there while we were there. But it wasn't like Chinese military, it was Chinese contractors, and they're digging in the caves, and they were digging for lithium and cobalt. And Afghanistan was rich in that mineral. So it's like, oh, this is what this is about. This had nothing to do with any of the actual terrorism. Yeah, there was Al-Qaeda, there's actually different groups, but they just didn't want us there. So
How did you get over the PTSD if you ever even had PTSD? Like, a lot of people come back from those situations are all over the place. How were you able to come back and sustain?
really, the biggest thing, man, the biggest thing has been this walk, this faith. I think a lot of that has been more so the real healing, like, knowing that I can come to Yah and Him comfort me through a lot of these things, and actually knowing the truth and why these things are the way they are. Like, that to me was like gold. And I was like, okay, I have to ride these things out. I'm gonna have to suffer some of these things. It wasn't easy seeing your friends die or anything like that, but the comforting thing is there's a reason why all these things are happening. I may not completely understand why it is going on the way this is, but that's not really for me to understand at this point. I just know that all things are going to work out for our good, and there's a better path at the end of all this. He says he brings the evil and he brings the good. So, like, that for me, going through this walk has been the most healing part of it all.
How are you able to run your or lead your household with these feast days, the set apart days? Have you ran into some, snares, stumbling blocks, or whatever, trying to get those things done? Because obviously you have to live on two calendars, right? Or whatever calendar you're on. You have to do your work calendar, and then you have to do Yah's feast days and holidays. How are you able to do that in your household?
Man, it's been a blessing, especially with my wife. I remember coming into this, it was a little bit tough, like, because we did start, I mean, we did some of those pagan holidays in the beginning, right? Christmas and all that with the kids when they were young. And I remember we started off with the Friday night Sabbath to Saturday night, and not understanding how the whole day works. And so that was really hard initially, especially with my wife, because she hated. She's like, why do we have to start doing this stuff the night before and all this stuff? Like, so that was a tough part, but she's grown so much in this whole thing. But I would say, even like you said, with the two calendars, my job, being a firefighter, we have such a really good schedule. And like, I work 8 days a month. And so the way I have it is I have it set up, I get 2 days on, like 48 hours on, then I get my 6 days off. But sometimes they kind of align on those. I could plug in a day off here or do a shift trade here. And the best part about it is everybody that I work with, minus one other dude. There's one other dude in this walk too that I work with, and that's even a blessing in itself. But everybody does all the regular holidays, so I'll work all their holidays for them, and I just make sure they pay me back on the days that I need. So
Nice, nice.
it works out. I mean, there's going to be a few days where I do work on a Sabbath, but with the work I do, I feel like if I'm actually really compassionate in doing it, I'm doing it to help others, right? So I typically get most of my days.
As a husband, I'm gonna switch gears a little bit. As a husband, what do you feel is your best ability or your best talent in, like you said, leading your wife, who's obviously not a part of being Israelite, but you're introducing her to something completely new. How are you able to lead her through that without, having, I don't know, maybe you having setbacks, or she just say, no, I'm not doing it. How are you able to lead through whatever talent or gift you think you have?
Yeah, I feel like I'm still trying to find out what my true gifts or talents is, but I think what I've had to do was develop, some sort of patience, use the fruit of the spirits and develop some sort of patience because we were butting heads a little bit. And maybe I was coming a little too hard and I was like, I have to kind of slow down and try to, just be patient with it and just allow it to take time. And that's the one thing too, is like really learning to trust the process. Like I think the biggest problem with me and maybe anybody else is like, I want results fast. And especially when I find something out. So I've actually had to just kind of slow down and trust the process and know that it's gonna take, I have to put in my head, like it's gonna take a little bit, just slowly it'll come around, be patient, pray about it. And she'll understand. But like the thing is like she's even like she'll be interested in a lot of these things and have questions. And then so like the best part is not forcing it. And I think some of the thing is like now at dinner time, we always read. We read right after we eat. And then the girls, they present they have a daily scripture thing that they do. I tell them you got to read just one chapter a day, give me three things. And do a summary, right? Do a summary. And so we review that every day at dinner, and it's like it keeps things fresh and we're all like just engaged. So I think that's been a blessing. And I think her, just I think one of the things too is she's actually seen the change. I think she's seen the change in me and knowing that like I'm really focusing on this. Like I'll read, I'll listen to these different things and she sees the change, and I think that's been more comforting for her, knowing like I'm not going out, like I'm just sitting here, come home, got our little home gym, whatever, like, and I'm home after work, and we're just trying to focus on these better things. So I think that's been the best part, and I think even more so too is like me actually trying to be a better help around the house, with she's a stay-at-home mom. And so when I'm off is like actually trying to help her, with cleaning and all these different things. And, she still won't let me do the laundry or fold, but for the most part, I think it's just actually trying to, be a member of the team and not just trying to put it all on her. But she, I mean, she also understands the role too at the same time. So.
I know that's what I was going to go with next, that she understand the role of a wife under the household of Yah. And a lot of women don't understand that role yet. So did you bring her to scripture that talks about this role, or just something you let her figure out on her own?
Man, I feel like she kind of was always already that way in a sense, like being I think when we first got married, especially like when we first came together, like she didn't work, she couldn't find a job because where we were stationed at, you had to be bilingual. We were stationed in El Paso, and it's funny because she's Mexican and she doesn't know a lick of Spanish anymore because her dad was actually her dad doesn't know a lick of English, which is funny too, but she grew up together, but her parents had the divorce, and so she didn't get to live with her dad, and her mom never spoke it with them. So I think her being at home when we were stationed out there, she just kind of took these roles and it just kind of progressed, but I think it was always already ingrained in her. But for the most part, when we read together, I think she sees a lot of these things already, so that's been kind of a blessing. And she, I mean, she does a lot, especially because we homeschool. So even like she's doing the homeschooling, now we have this new kid that's been the new latest and greatest addition that's been a little tough on us, but she's been managing. So I feel like she was already there
Okay.
in a
Why did you
sense.
decide to homeschool?
A lot of man, there's a lot of things with that. Even the schooling here in Washington, the system here, did not agree. They voted in it was like proposition, whatever, A something, and they wanted to bring in teaching the sex ed stuff at like a young age. And I was like, I just want my kids to be kids, right? And my daughter, my oldest, she's 12 now. So we actually ended up doing the private school route. We were going to an Adventist school. An Adventist private school because we figured that was the best at the time. But the issue I had with that is when we were there, the girls know how we are, and like I said, we've been in this walk for a decent amount of time, and they they always use Yahuwah, all these different things when they're in school. So they had Bible reading time, and I tell you, when they would read, they would be like, "Hey, Yah," they would say, they would replace the name with Yah, and which I was completely cool with. But the teacher's like, "What are you guys saying?" And they're like, "We're saying the Creator's real name," and she's like, "You can't say that." And my kids are like, "No, we're gonna still say it." So there was like this little beef, and so when I heard that, I was just like, "Keep saying it, just keep saying it." Like that, and I was like, "That's 100% proof that there's power in that name because they don't like it." And so, not only that, there was a little bit of issues with the teacher, and the teachers were picking on the girls. I mean, they're the only two, I guess you'd say, in this area, colored kids in the school, and so they were just having a hard time there. They had a lot of friends there, but it was just like the teaching. We figured they were getting singled out, and Janae was always coming home with schoolwork when the other one wasn't, and she wasn't like she. We would go there, and deal with a lot of these lesson plans, and the teacher was just teaching for like I don't even think she was a qualified teacher, so that kind of frustrated us. So we wanted to take it in our own hands, and it was kind of something that was in our mind anyway, because it's like, man, why are we letting these people indoctrinate our kids and all these different things? And so once we pulled them out, it was just kind of like the best thing ever, because now that money that we had set aside for private school, we have it set aside for our own stuff with them. We take them on field trips. We do all these things, and it's actually been way better. They learn, they love it. They don't want to go back. So
Damn, that's what's up. How do you feel about what's happening in the world right now? And do you see it from a scriptural standpoint? How do you protect? How do you provide? What are you prepared for? Have you thought anything about what you're seeing or the events that are unfolding?
yeah, I definitely look at it from a scriptural standpoint. It's actually very interesting to me that these things are going on and people can't see it, because a lot of it's just like it's man, it just seems so fake and ridiculous. Like even with the whole thing, like the one thing that was very near and dear to my heart was the Venezuela thing, because my mom's from Trinidad and Tobago. And that we went back to Trinidad last June, and that's when a lot of that started, with the prime minister talking about like the drugs and all these different things, and she was trying to pick a beef with Venezuela. And I'm like, that just doesn't make any sense that this little island is picking a fight with this big, deal. And I was like, where is this coming from? But then when I start doing a little more research, you see that she was meeting with Vance and what's that, Marco Rubio, and I'm like, these dudes are putting this stuff in their ear. Like it was just like a weird type of deal where they're like, yeah, you need to say these things and kind of create a reason for us to go down there and deal with this so-called drug thing, which was more based off of oil. And then you see the thing in Iran. You see the thing when they're trying to take over Greenland, and Greenland has all these resources and all these different things. And it's like, it's no different from when I was in Afghanistan. So I just see, especially with all this stuff going on, gas prices going up like crazy. When everyone's like, oh yeah, well, since they're taking all this oil, it's gonna get cheaper. Like, you guys are crazy. Like, that's not gonna happen. And it just seems like everything is lining up perfectly. Even like from the last election with Trump, like, and they had that early debate, and then Biden can't even say a sentence. It's like they're setting it up for Trump to win. And me and my wife, I remember me and my wife saying, it's like they set all this up for him to win. People are gonna get excited, but it's not gonna be anything like how it was in his first campaign. So all these things are playing out, and I just feel like, if you can't see these signs that are going on, I think it's a good time to start. A lot of people in this walk see what's going on, and I definitely think it's a good time to actually prepare, but not in the way like, these doomsday preppers are pre preparing, right? Like, get prepared with the scripture, but also I'm not saying not be ready and have, a backup plan. Like, we have a plan. Like, I got, we have food stored. What we did is we got like gray containers, those food gray containers, put rice, oxygen absorbers, all these different things in them. and just have water. I laugh because I see a lot of guys that, these preppers that like, oh, I gotta have ammo for days. Like, you can't carry all that ammo if you gotta move.
Right.
Like, so I'm like, I'm not, I have ammo, but like, I have enough for, we gotta survive. I'm not going out looking for a firefight out here. I'm going out, I'm trying to hide, trying to, so I really don't, I'm actually not even scared to that point, because I know we're gonna have to go through some adversity. But I'm so, like you say, like, because there's so many people that are talking about like leaving the states, all these things. And I love when you say like, we don't have to like just wait and let the miracle happen. Like, he said he's gonna do it. He said he's gonna gather us. So let's wait and see. That's the beauty of it. He says it's gonna be greater than the first one. And I think when you see that power, there's gonna be no denying. So I'm actually waiting for all these things to happen. I say it all the time to my kids. I'm like, man, what a time to be alive. Like this, like to see some of these things that are about to start happening, which I hope is soon. Like, because I always wonder, I'm like, man, how did they split the sea? Like, I want to see like a visual. Like I hope when we, if we make it to that, the kingdom, we get to see like a movie screen of just like, hey, how these things happen. I would love that. But I think like we're about to be in a time where we're about to start seeing these miracles. So yeah, I definitely think a lot of these things that are happening are 100% prophetical. And I can't wait.
Right. Does the military let you keep your gear as far as weapons too, or no?
No,
No, they take
no.
all that back.
Yeah.
So what do you have in your house now?
Ooh, one of my favorites. I won't give all the stuff that I have, but one of my favorites is I have I don't know if you heard of a Rock Island VR80. And that's just one of the things that I have is the semi-auto shotgun. So it's almost like an AR-15 shotgun, a 12-gauge shotgun. So I use that. That's like our home defense type deal. But I mean, I have a few other things as well. I do. So like also I used to be a cop as well. So I still have, some of my vests and all that. So but the thing is like I have that, but we don't rely on that. And but what we do have like for the kids is we have already have like go bags packed. Like if we gotta go, the bags come in and we just go.
Why'd you stop being a cop?
So that was probably one of the most stressful times in my life. I hated going to work, hated putting on a uniform, and it was actually that was shortly after I got out of the military, out of active duty, because I actually got out of the military in 2020 full. I did 10 years, 5 years active, 5 years reserve. But in 2014, 2015, that's when I was a cop. That was during a lot of, that whole body cam. That was when the body cam became like a big deal. And where I was a cop was in Hobbs, New Mexico, and per capita, we had more crime than Albuquerque. And it was like I was getting in a foot pursuit every other day, fighting someone in an alley. And my oldest at the time, she was like 8 months. And I was never home. I was either on my days off, I was in court, all these different things. And I man, I got burnt out. Like I hated every bit of it. I was like, people hate me. Like that's like I'll pull someone over for the littlest thing. I was gonna give them a warning, and they're instantly just screaming at me. I was like, hey, just chill out. Like, let me just explain to you what's going on. And it was just, it was miserable. That was one of the most stressful times of my life. So and then there's like even some of the things like, the way certain guys are and the way certain guys moved and operated, right? Like, oh, if there's a person out at this time at light, you got to figure out a way to get a stop. And I'm like, for what? And they're like, well, there's only a certain amount of people out at this time of the night. And I was like, that's not true. Like, I'll get in arguments. It's like my mom was a single mom and she worked multiple jobs and she worked at night. So, like, that doesn't mean everybody that's out at night is bad. Like, she's just getting one place to another place. So, it's like, if there's a reason, I'm gonna stop him. So, that was a lot of, I got in, when I was on my probationary period there, like, guys, like, you gotta get more stops. You gotta get more stops. I'm like, but if someone, I'm not just gonna look for a reason. Like, you gotta do something, So, that was a lot of why I left being law enforcement. It was just a lot of, it was just too much.
Now, I may ask you a deep question. What were you going through that made you go from getting into the military to now getting into a cop to now being a fireman? Like, Where it's just
As
like
far as
you felt like you felt you had to be the in the role of protecting or serving, or like what
yeah,
was it?
man, I think I've always like so the thing is I always wanted to be a firefighter since I was a little kid. My uncle in Trinidad, he was a firefighter. He was probably one of my biggest, influences on that. Even though I never really got to see him, I just knew I had an uncle that was a firefighter. And I was like, oh, that's cool, right? Something about the red truss going down, something about going in and helping people. Like to me, that was always the cool thing, right? So I was actually before I went into the military, I was a firefighter. So I worked. So when I was in high school, we had an ROP program, which was a fire technology program. And then I did a fire explorer program. And then I went in because that was always my goal was to be a firefighter. And then I went in and I did the U.S. Forest Service where I did a lot of wildland firefighting. So I grew up in Southern California. And so I did wildland firefighting when I was 18 to 20 for 2 years. So I did a lot of like the wildland deployments. Then I was like, part of me was like, man, I kind of wanted to join the military. And at that point, it was like I wanted to do it. I was like, I didn't want to get older and then regret not doing it and seeing, what was like, man, why, what would have happened if I did do this or didn't do it? So I was like, let me just join. My mom was definitely against it. Me being her only son. But I was like, I just got to try. I just want to see what's going on. It wasn't until like I got to basic training where I was like, I think I made the wrong move. But it actually, it worked out. Being in the military, but like coming out, while I was in, I was actually active duty. I was an MP, military police officer. And so getting out, I actually never wanted to be a cop. I did not want to be a cop at all. I wanted to go back into the fire service. And when I was getting ready to get out, a police department, obviously they came out there recruiting and they're like, we're gonna give you a 50,000 signing bonus and this and that. And I was like, oh, 50,000. I was like, okay, yeah, I might do that. It's gonna help me take care of the family. And so I was like, I already have the law enforcement experience, this and that. So that was really what I wanted to do. I've always felt public safety was it. And then come to find out when I'm in law enforcement, I realized how much I hated it. But being a firefighter was really the best part about it was like just actually this dude, it's that brotherhood, the guys being at the station, actually going out and actually making a difference, people actually like you. There's a lot of different things like that, but yeah, that's just something I always want to do. I always wanted to serve in that way.
Do you feel like you're called now to serve Yah, and it's almost the same type of energy you served in the military, as a fireman, a police officer? Do you feel the difference between being pulled or called to serve the Most High Yah more than you served in the past years?
Absolutely, man. That's been one of the biggest things, like through this whole awakening, it's been actually kind of pushing me or pulling me away from not really like helping, but the public servant aspect of it, because there is a lot of in the fire service and all that, and in these, I guess, in these type of work line of work, there's a lot of egos in it, and I feel like I'm being pulled away from that to focus on something a little bit more greater, right? Like I actually, me and my buddy have a podcast, that's basically based off this faith, and I feel like that is way more important to reaching other people than what I'm actually doing now, because I feel like some people may do this job. I'm not saying that I have this motive, but when you're in this line of work, there's like a sense of like, oh, I'm a hero, I'm a this, I'm that. And that's where it kind of gets frustrating. At least when I look at it now from when I was younger, like, oh yeah, I'm doing this, like, oh, I'm doing this for the greater good. Like, you love when you go to the store and people like, thank you for your service, right? Like there's that sense of glory. And then as I go through this walk, I was like, glory is not for me anymore. That's not really mine. Like there's been, cardiac arrests where I've saved people. And they're like, thank you for saving my life. And I'm like, I didn't save your life. I said, I was just there. I just applied some skills to help. Like when it's your time, it's your time. I have no control over that, right? So the biggest thing is like the glory in the job is not really what drives me anymore, I guess in a sense, but focusing on, the stuff that actually really matters, like this word and this truth, I think that is definitely more of the way I want to go. And I've actually been like trying to find different avenues of, I hate to say it, like leave the fire service, and actually like, focus more on family, focus more on y'all, but like this is what pays the bills at the moment,
Right, I got you. Has Yah disciplined you throughout the walk? Have you known or felt when he's disciplining you?
Yes, absolutely. One of the funniest ones when I realized, like when I knew instantly, he was disciplining me, was when I run the department's flag football team, and so I was always playing on it. And me getting old, I get injured and all these different things. We were playing one of the flag football games. Very first play, I'll go down and get this dude's flag, and he flag guards, but he elbows me in the face. And it fractures my orbital floor. At the time, I didn't know it, but I had split vision. It was like a movie film, like a flick in this eye, and my eye was swollen shut. And so I kind of was like, I think I'll be done for a little bit. But my wife and kids were on the way. They were coming to watch. They never got to see me play. And then we were supposed to go have lunch on the beach and all that. We ended up doing it, but I couldn't see. I couldn't drive. And we ended up, I was like, I think we need to go to the ER. So we drove to the ER, and they were getting ready to send me into emergency surgery because I fractured the floor. They told me I was going to have like basically Forrest Whitaker eye. That's what I call it. That wasn't the real diagnosis, but my kids, they were crying like, "Dad, why are you doing this? Why are you playing this?" And I was like, "All right, I'll never play again." I told them that. I was like, "I'll never play again. I'll just we'll focus on just being home and being just focusing on the family, right?" So a new season comes by and they're like, "Hey, we need an extra player." So I was like, "All right, I'll go play." Literally, like, I ran, I caught the ball, I cut up field, and I just feel this pop. And then I even, like, when I fell, my finger hit the ground. And then, like, I didn't feel it, but then my finger's like hanging. So I broke my finger, I felt my knee pop. And all that, I was just like, and the dudes heard it on the sideline. They're like, "Dang, you heard your knee pop." All this crazy stuff. Sorry. And like at that moment, like I kind of laughed and I was like, "I hear you, y'all. I'm not supposed to be playing. I told you, I told the kids I wasn't gonna play again. Made that promise to them." And then, at that moment, you're like, "You said you were gonna stop. I'm gonna make you stop." So I actually laughed at that one, and I knew that was definitely from him. The bad part about it is I tried to hide it from my wife, because I knew if I got home, she was going to yell at me. So my hand was swollen. This whole hand was swollen. The fingers still kind of messed up, but it was like a Mickey Mouse hand. I'm limping. I go to work, and I was like, I can't be out of work. Like I'm running these calls, doing all these things, just trying to like play it off. And I'm sitting at the table, and the guy's like, "Man, what is wrong with your hand?" I was like, "You see that?" They're like, "Dude, your hand is swollen." So next day, I went home and I told my wife, I was like, "Hey, you're gonna be mad, but I think I broke my finger and I hurt my knee." She's like, "Was this playing football?" I was like, "Yep." But she was like, What are we doing?" So I kind of laughed, but he's punished me in many other ways. That was one of the funniest ones. But like I sit there and I think about certain things and the lessons that he has for me. And sometimes it clicks, like where it's not really, I guess more so it's like a feeling. Like the other day, I was really convicted, or because there was a Sabbath that I had a doctor's appointment for my shoulder, and it was a Sabbath, and I try not to schedule anything on there, but usually appointments, I was like, that's the only one I could get, I'll do it. So I ended up doing it, but the issue was I thought I filled up my car. Didn't fill up my car. The appointment's far away, and I'm like, I'm about to run out of gas. I need to get gas. Fill my car up with gas. Buying on the Sabbath, and it was kind of frustrating for me. And I sat there, and I was like, this whole motive for me doing this appointment was selfish because I needed this appointment to get back to work. I just had the surgery, and when I had that feeling, it was more so disappointing because instead of just trusting in Yah, knowing that he's going to get me back to work on time, I tried to force the issue, schedule this appointment, which caused me to error on Sabbath, which I was fully aware of, right? And it just kind of, it wasn't like, dude, you're get away from me. It was like, bro, like think about all the decisions that you make. Like just put some thought into it. Don't be selfish into these decisions, because if you just wait and trust on me, I'm gonna protect you. I'm gonna get you back to work. And that was kind of running through my head, where like I was just forcing these things just to happen. And it may be to some people that may be little, but to me, I was just like, that is bugging me. Like I've been good. I haven't been spending on Sabbath. I haven't been doing these things. And it's just those little things that it reminds me of, like, hey, let's not do this. Let's, like, I don't know. So maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I get in my head on these certain things, but I feel like, just striving for that perfection, that maturity. I'm just grateful I'm able to recognize when I'm wrong and try to make that change,
Right. Well, this is almost at the end of the show, and I always give guests a chance to give some advice to young brothers that are in this walk too, especially young brothers who are either married or looking to be married, or are fathers and looking to be father and married. What would you say is the best advice that you can give being in this walk?
The best advice I would say is really digging deep and being honest with yourself, and being able to recognize that, like what I just said, is recognize your flaws and understand that, I guess one of the biggest things too is try to put yourself in other shoes, especially when you are trying to help others. In this walk is like, how would you want to be treated in this? And I think that even goes into, the laws, right? Love others as you love yourself. So I think a lot of it is just more so being honest with yourself, knowing that you make mistakes, knowing that you messed up, but be willing to make that change. And I think that's the full, I guess that's really the bulk of the submission, right? That submission part is be ready to submit and just be like, yeah, I messed up, but what can I do? So the other big thing I would say is definitely be open-minded and listen to really all the information that people are trying to share with you. But the other biggest thing is, the fruits of the spirits. Like my favorite one is patience, is just have patience. Like even with working with my relationship with my wife, having patience with her and her to have patience with me even after all my mistakes, right? So, and just the biggest things, man, I think those are some of the few keys, right? And really what I want to say too is like, I know I saw one of the brothers on comment on one of your things that you're saying is going into the military. I really would hope that he considers, or anybody trying to consider going in the military at this time, like don't serve this B system. I really want to make that a point and consider that, this military or this government just thinks of you as just a number, thinks of you as just, a cog in the wheel. They got money already allotted for you and your death, and they're gonna get replace you and get another, right? So don't be a part of this B system. No, also consider, taking oaths, right? Taking oaths for this system too, right? Like an oath of office and doing that, right? And the scriptures, I think, is pretty clear on not taking these oaths and making these allegiances to these things. So I don't think this is the time that people want. I don't think you want to go on and serve in this time frame. Like I wouldn't let my kids do it. Anybody that call, I'll be a straight shooter. But if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me as well. But definitely weigh all your options out. But don't serve this system. Get out the best you can. But that's really all I got too.
Well, thanks, my brother. Thanks for coming on. And I know we've chatted a lot in the emails and all that, but I'm gonna drop your email if you don't mind in the
That's
comment
fine.
sections for any of the brothers who want to really reach out to you and see what this military life is all about, especially in this time frame. Like you said, is very dangerous, and we're supposed to be getting ready to serve the Most High Yah to enhance our hedge and our protection in our own households. Like you said, not to serve this beast system. But you were on point with everything you said, especially coming from so much of serving this world. And now you had have gotten rest by following the laws, statutes, commandments, and seeking Yah. And you don't have to do much else after that. You pretty much live a really chill schedule. It's what I talked about. I said, if you really want to follow the Most High, he will put you in a position where you only think about him, where you won't be so tied down to the system and to the jobs of this world. Like, if you really want to seek rest, follow him first, and then he'll put you in position. All right, my brother. Thanks for coming on again. Well, we'll
Thanks for
continue
having me.
our conversations in the email.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem.